Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
If you live in Johannesburg like me, you spent the better part of this year boiling kettle water to brush your teeth here in Parkview, and you'll know the city is not so much falling apart as actively decomposing at the moment. Potholes have become ponds, traffic lights are decorative, and Joburg water has turned flow into a figure of speech. A recent headline in the Wall Street Journal said, "This is what it looks like when a city gives up." While my guest today, Helen Ziller, needs very little introduction, and she's certainly not giving up. The former Premier of the Western Cape, the DA's Chair of the Federal Council, and now once again stepping into the fray, this time as the DA's candidate for Mayor of Johannesburg. Helen, lovely to have you on the show. And I'll admit, while I'm deeply grateful for you throwing your hat in the ring, given the viper's nest you're stepping into, I'd love to know, you know, what drove that decision to take such a difficult job?
Well, I have been searching for about 18 months in Johannesburg to find a candidate that has the experience, the political nous, the capacity to take hard knocks and fight back, the understanding of really complex systems, the experience of what the ANC can be like in a context where you have to both work with them and oppose them. And it was very, very difficult to find somebody. I had a few nibbles, but I didn't get a bite. And especially when really good people who've done a lot of hard yards before see what a mayor earns, they lose all interest at that point, given the complete invasion of privacy you're going to face, given the slings and arrows you're going to take from the media and other people all the time. You know, people say, "I don't need this in my life." And I can understand that. We've got very good councillors in the city of Joburg, and I'm very glad that some of them put their hat in the ring and gave me a very good run for my money. But it's true that none of them have had the long experience or have taken over a sphere of government from the ANC or have had bare-knuckle fights in those very difficult trenches. And many of them will be absolutely excellent mayors in a couple of years' time. But I think the experience of managing complex coalitions, of getting things done despite opposition, of ensuring that your opponents don't extort and bribe you into submission, all of those things have to be learnt on the job.
And now is not the time to be learning that kind of thing on the job, given how far down the road the city's decline is. And we've all been watching it for years now, but feels like it's accelerating. The water outages, the billing chaos, the sheer dysfunction in city management, the patronage. Where do you begin when you look at this as a complex system, as you've just described? What's step one and two in stabilizing a city that seems to have lost the plot so entirely?
Well, step one is really understanding the budget. And in a city like Johannesburg, that's a very complex thing. And to understand why the budget is always underfunded and where the money has gone to. With good financial management, Cape Town has enough money to invest 40 billion rand in infrastructure over the next 3 years. Johannesburg cannot even keep current maintenance up to date, and its own maintenance backlog is three times the city's current budget. Now, that is a terrifying statistic, because if we get into Johannesburg, we won't be able to be planning capital expenditure for the future and expanding all of the networks of essential infrastructure to areas that are growing and that need a solid basis from which to develop housing and other top structures. We will have to be catching up with the past. So while Cape Town is planning for 2050, I think, we are planning for 2000. That's the truth in Johannesburg. And it is an enormous challenge. So I'd first have to understand the budget. Where has this money gone to? All of this money. Why has it evaporated through the systems? Where are the leaks? Then I will go through everything with the Auditor General, the management report, and look at where all the risks for corruption are, which are plentiful in the city of Johannesburg. I will also read internal audit reports and various other things just to get a grip on how the finances function or don't function, because the first thing we have to do is stabilize the finances. And the first thing I will do is ring fence the funds for utilities.
Ah.
That is water, electricity, sewerage, roads, etc. So money that comes in service charges for those services will stay in those ring-fenced accounts to improve those services and invest in infrastructure. The big problem in the city of Johannesburg is that that has not been the case, and that the money that comes in from people paying service charges is swept out of those accounts and used for other things. Johannesburg has become an employment bureau for the ANC, and scratching the surface, I can see that it is so corrupt that corruption is now the system.
Yeah.
And as Halima Mutlante once said, every project in government is designed to make someone in the ANC rich. And that is the situation in Johannesburg. The amount of sabotage that goes on perfectly workable infrastructure so that people can come in and fix it,
yeah,
or claim money for fixing it when they haven't fixed it. The water tankers are legendary, the sabotage of the water system, the turning off the valves, so that the water tankers have to be switched on. The system is profoundly corrupt. I heard from somebody who helps clients deal with their crazy utility bills in Johannesburg, just how the system is fleeced from staff members of Joburg claiming commission on service charges from major clients, which they had no hand in getting in.
Yeah.
And the extraordinary ingenuity and the level of corruption in Johannesburg, I have to come to full grips with it. We've got to make sure the system becomes honest again and the corruption is closed off. That's obviously going to be a very dangerous enterprise, but unless we get hold of that corruption, we're not going to make headway with the backlogs that the city faces.
Yeah, I think hard to quibble with that being step one, stem the bleeding. We know the city's audit outcomes have been dire for years. And I'm very pleased to hear you say ring-fencing money that ratepayers pay and taxpayers pay for purpose, because I was chatting to the DG in the Department of Water Affairs, Sean Phillips, who also did good work at Operation Vulindlela. He says that is one of the keys in phase two of OV that they've really identified. There's often a knee-jerk political aversion, though, when you start then cleaning things out to this word privatization. But Joburg state-run entities, from City Power to Joburg Water, have proven incapable of delivering. I mean, it's just a cold fact. Would you consider bringing in private sector management or concession-style partnerships to get the basics right again?
Well, ironically, that's what the entities were supposed to be in the first place. They were supposed to establish entities outside the red tape and bureaucracy of the city and enable real experts to be on the boards, who would appoint outstanding individuals, not deployed cadres, to manage those entities. That was the idea from the beginning. And it has failed miserably for the simple reason that boards did not constitute experts. I've just been through the board of Johannesburg Water, and it is quite extraordinary to see how there's one engineer on it, I think, one engineer on the entire board. And the board is clearly a haven for deployed cadres, which was contrary to the original idea. And then, of course, the people appointed in those positions in the actual entity to manage projects and to get things done are also deployed cadres and are also in the same corrupt systems as the people within the systems in Johannesburg. So that completely defeats the purpose of having efficiency gains by getting outside of the bureaucracy of the city and all the rules and regulations and acts and treasury notes that prescribe processes there, which are very, very difficult to deal with. Enormous red tape. And the idea of getting these critical services outside that bureaucracy was the original idea. That has failed miserably. And it's going to be easiest, from my analysis of the rules and the laws, to resurrect the entities than it will be to fix the internal functioning of Joburg. And we can turn the entities into proper concessioning partners in order to achieve those outcomes. So the mayor has very substantial powers in relation to the boards of those entities. And we can appoint real experts to those entities and seek to get them functioning as they were originally envisaged.
And I think that's encouraging as ratepayers to hear, because often one thinks of the enormity of the task at hand and the extent of the deployed cadre problem and the capacity constraints, and thinks, well, there's very little that, you know, a political party can do within a very short space of time to turn the tide. But actually, the mayor has power and has power to implement real change. I heard a story that Johannesburg Water wasn't in charge as an entity of its fleet. That sat somewhere else. And so it couldn't decide how to utilize its fleet to send out trucks to attend to water outages, which to me just made absolutely zero sense. But it clearly means someone somewhere is getting a tender for that. But, you know, another thorny issue, and I think residents and businesses do largely pay, certainly ratepayers, because you get cut off where I live if you don't pay. But there is a culture of impunity in certain areas, not paying for services, whether it's electricity or water or rates. That culture of non-payment is another thing that's killing municipal finances. How would you reestablish that culture of just doing the right thing, civic responsibility, while ensuring that you're dealing with the services that need to be fixed at the same time?
Well, my experience in Cape Town tells me that you do it in the following way. Firstly, you look at your debtors book and you look at all the government departments that owe you hundreds of millions, which is normally the case and is the case in Johannesburg. And then you send them all the notices and the disconnection notices and all the things you have to, and tell them you will cut them off if they don't pay. And then you do. And it has a massive exemplary effect on other major debtors to the city that they need to pay. Then the next step is to ensure that you roll out smart meters that cannot be bypassed and that everybody has to use, everybody, in order to deal with their water and their electricity. You start cutting off in the more wealthy suburbs, and you go then down to the poorer people. But by that stage, the demonstration effect and the example has settled in, as it did in Cape Town. And that was a very effective method. Of course, the difference between Cape Town and Johannesburg is that Cape Town had a very effective billing system. And so when people got their bills in Cape Town, they were accurate, because we implemented the SAP system properly from the beginning. And so our billing system was trusted. And if you had a problem with your bill, you would come in and explain what it was, and they would investigate and find out quickly and resolve it quickly. Mm. Very simple example. A family member of mine had a water bill for 35,000 Rand. He went to the council and said, this can't be possible. They traced a leak outside his property. And then they said, no, that's outside your property. It's not your responsibility, and we will carry the cost. But it was quick. It took about 2 weeks to sort that out. In Joburg, you have people with insane bills who don't know where they came from, and then who are told they have to pay them up front until the problem is resolved. And when these bills run into hundreds of thousands of rands, it's obviously impossible to do that. So we'll have to have a very important and capacitated dispute resolution mechanism in the billing system to get to the heart of where the problem lies and whose fault it is. I spoke to a very experienced professional in this field when I was in a meeting and in a dinner just some while ago, and she was explaining to me how she does this. And I would be inclined to set up a unit of these kinds of experts who can take these disputes on billing with the city, get to the bottom of them as fast as they can, and resolve them. The number of these disputes is inconceivably high, and the chaos with the billing system is going to have to stop, because you can't deal with non-payers until you've got a credible billing system.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people who are not paying because their bills are insane and bear no relation to reality.
Yeah. I mean, that is at the heart of the social contract between any government and its ratepayers or taxpayers. You know, it's a two-way street. And just in my suburb, my neighborhood alone, I can almost 30% of the messages on the WhatsApp groups are, do you know anyone who can help me with a dispute? I've just received a 30,000 rand bill for electricity, which is just impossible because half the time we don't have power, even though there's low load shedding, the substation's gone down. I mean, it really is. It's almost farcical at this point. The economy, though, I chat to executives on my various platforms, Helen, and it's amazing how much investment is going into Cape Town at the moment. And the number one reason they give property developers, 91 just opened a 500 million rand new HQ in the CBD, is that there is political will. If they've got an issue, you know, the doors are open, the governance is clean, and so capital flows. It's really not that difficult. How are you going to reignite that confidence in the Johannesburg economy amongst business? What are your top priorities to reignite confidence and make Joburg investable again? Because it is still very much, and it should be, the engine, the heartbeat of the South African economy.
That's the entire point. It still is very much, and it can be rescued. And it can be rescued by fixing governance, because good governance leads to reliable service delivery. It creates confidence in the future of the city. People believe if they invest there, the investment will be safe because there's no corruption, or that corruption is dealt with very speedily and heavily when it arises, that services will always be there, and that they can invest with confidence. When they invest, the economy grows and jobs are created. And the result is exactly what we want. In Cape Town, unemployment is at least 10 percentage points lower than it is in the rest of the country. And it all starts with good, competent government doing what it's supposed to do, delivering services, making sure things work, and the rest of the pipeline to job creation takes care of itself. In Johannesburg, because government has been a feeding trough for connected cadres and corruption has become the system, none of the services that local government is supposed to deliver actually function. And no one wants to invest in a city where there's no water in the taps on regular occasions, where they don't have reliable electricity, where the roads are completely potholed, where sewage runs in the street. They don't want that. And so they take the investment elsewhere. It's that simple. And so we've got to ring fence the budgets. We've got to get experts on those boards. We've got to rehire professional engineers and others. We've got to make absolutely sure we have forensic auditors to sniff out where the corruption is, and very safe reporting lines for whistleblowers.
Yeah.
We have to root out the corruption wherever it comes up. And it is a process, not an event. And I've asked for 5 years to get five fixes.
Well, I think that's also important to manage the expectations of the public. And I think once you start building trust, people will tend to, you know, give you the time, because I think most people are aware of just how deep the rot runs, how far we've fallen. Just on this issue of cleaning house and tackling the incompetence and corruption, what's your practical plan to identify and remove the scores of incompetent and frankly corrupt individuals without triggering legal gridlock and disciplinary appeals and labor disputes that have paralyzed past cleanup efforts?
Well, before we're even in office, a lot of people are coming to me to tell me about the scams. The scams with property are just breathtaking. The scams with debt collection are breathtaking. The scams with the fleet, the yellow fleet, the red fleet, are just extraordinary and ingenious, frankly. If people spent as much time on thinking out ingenious schemes for corruption, on actually being functional investors in businesses and becoming entrepreneurs, well, this economy would be flying. But the schemes are so extraordinary that rational people can hardly believe it. And so I'm writing up a database of these and applying my mind to all of them and how we would go about dealing with them when in office. I have to get a very secure reporting line for whistleblowers. There are many very good people in Johannesburg who want to remain in that city and see it work. Now, the great risk when you go up the line, as you do with Babita Deokaran, for example, she went up the line, reported to her head of department, I think her name was Mrs. Modja, not knowing that her head of department was benefiting from the Tembisa Hospital corruption. And so she was reporting her concerns about the corruption to one of the beneficiaries of corruption. And it wasn't soon after that that Babita was assassinated. So we have to make absolutely sure that we've got channels that don't have to go up the line, as all bureaucrats are taught to do, to escalate it up the line. You have to make sure that they can go another route and be completely protected, and that we will have agencies and outside players doing the investigation at a very high level. We've got to invest a lot in that, because in Joburg, as I say, corruption has become the system.
Yeah. Outside of the corruption, I think there's also an element of just bloat in the bureaucracy and salaries eating up an enormous chunk of the city's budget, where it has been a patronage system for securing votes, and so people not adding very little or adding very little value. Would you be prepared to cut headcount? And if so, how would you navigate the politics of taking on the unions and all of those entrenched patronage networks when it comes to right-sizing what is fit for delivering services?
Well, if you look at the expenditure on capital versus operational expenditure, you've seen that in real terms, that's discounting for inflation, for example, operational expenditure has gone up more than 100% in 10 years, approximately. And that's because the city of Joburg has become an employment bureau for the ANC. And we have to do first an audit of the organogram and find out what the structure looks like, what all these little units are everywhere and what they're doing, whether that aligns to the city's priorities and mandate under the Constitution, and start trimming very dramatically. Now, I don't want to trim at the bottom where people are actually collecting the refuse or fixing the leaks or sweeping the streets or cutting the verges. Those jobs you want to maintain. You want to strengthen your service delivery depots very much. The massive bloat comes just below top management level. And people in the most senior positions are approached by a whole range of ANC cadres to ensure that they appoint key people in different positions and create jobs for all sorts of people at very inflated salaries at a high level. And that's where much of the problem lies. So that happens in the entities because, as I said to you, the entities have completely lost their way. They were supposed to be the concessioning model that you spoke about at the beginning. They've simply become mini versions of ESCOM within the city. And the same applies to the city as a whole. And the amount of duplication is breathtaking. So we would have to trim very substantially. We would do that if there is a need to restructure. And it's appropriate to restructure, although I'm not a fan of restructuring necessarily, because then you spend 5 years doing nothing else but restructuring. And in all the battles that are associated with that, I would just like to streamline and get rid of duplication and ensure that real skills and expertise is at the right place in the organization.
Just lastly, crime. And I was pleasantly surprised. It must be because of the G20 that I was pulled over by a metro cop the other day driving through Sylvia's Pass. And I said, oh, it's so good to see you. He says, yes, we're putting your tax money to work. But it was almost a joke. And you look at Johannesburg's lawlessness, it's obviously a big factor driving capital out. Would you be open to giving back the JMPD's investigative powers and turning them from glorified traffic cops into genuine city crime fighting police and a force at a time when it really feels that it's a very, very stretched and thin blue line, if at all, that we see out there?
Well, as you know, that's what we're desperately trying to do in Cape Town. We've got a first-rate Metropolitan Police Service in Cape Town, but they don't have any investigative powers. They've got minimal powers. They can police the bylaws. They can prevent crime, which is basically patrol the streets, and they can deal with traffic infringements. That's all. So we want them to have investigative powers because you can't actually deal with crime until you can investigate it and get trial-ready dockets into the public prosecuting authority. That's what you need. And that is what the Metro Police are not allowed to do by law.
Yeah.
But it is very simple to solve. There's a solution in which the minister can delegate that power to the Metro Police if he so wishes. The trouble is he does not so wish. And the ANC is determined to centralize that power in their hands because, of course, if you have the police and the military, you've got sole power over the forces of coercion in a society, and that's what the ANC wants. So we are going through all the processes that we have to go through, that the intergovernmental relations framework requires us to go through before we take a constitutional court case to argue that it's irrational not to delegate those powers. And in Johannesburg, I would first like to see that the JMPD is a really effective force, corruption-free, doing an excellent job before I would ask for those powers to be devolved. Because if you have a corrupt Metropolitan Police Service undertaking allegedly corruption investigations and other criminal investigations, you're going to have the problem that they'll tip off everybody far more quickly. You've got to have a corruption-free police service. And I'm not accusing the JMPD of anything. They might be absolutely excellent. But before I take a step like that, I would really want to be sure that they are. And one of the people I've asked to come up to Johannesburg to assist me in that is the person who built the Cape Town Metropolitan Police Service to the level that it is, and that is JP Smith. JP Smith is a real expert in the field. He's coming to help us on the 10th with looking at a few things like the fire service and other major weaknesses in the Johannesburg system. And I have asked him, and he has undertaken, to come and assist me with a JMPD if we take office in Joburg.
Well, Helen, I've got to thank you for your time. And I might just look back on this year as the best time to invest in property in Johannesburg. If you win next year and if you manage to implement, even half of what you plan to, I think we can actually start turning things around. You know, Joburg's motto is unity and development. We've had no unity. We've had no development for years. It's almost inconceivable to think of, but it can happen. You've done it in the Western Cape. And, it's just remarkable what can happen when governance and accountability meet political will. So let's hope that the voters make the right choice next year. Thanks so much for joining us here on Classic Business.
We hope so too. Thank you very much, Michael.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.